This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Radio, and today I'm joined again by Elizabeth and JT Craft of EBA Hearing. Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good morning. We are well. How are you?
I am well. Very nice to see you both. And today we're just going to talk about hearing, and I think mainly hearing loss, because when you don't have good hearing, life changes quite dramatically. What are the things that people... We don't get hearing tests like we maybe go for eye tests or physical checkups and so on. Maybe that's something that the healthcare community needs to start thinking about. But in the absence of that, how do people make sure that they retain their hearing? What do they need to do? Is it a bit like eyes, which is that your optical health will deteriorate just by the aging process? Is that going to always happen? Are there patterns of hearing loss that people can watch for or watch for in their loved ones?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot to it, but what I would say is to start with, it is unfortunate, and we need to start working toward a correction just ourselves until healthcare catches up. Of being proactive about our hearing health is what we call it now, because we're realizing all these health-related implications associated with hearing loss. So it's healthy to do so, but we just need to be proactive, you know, in throughout the rest of our kind of health and wellness picture. There's a lot of proactivity. We get wellness checks. We get blood draws. We go get our eyes checked on a regular basis.
We may change our diet.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Teeth cleaning. Mm-hmm. You know, all these things that we realize are important and that they need to be maintained, right? Unfortunately, there's a kind of a lack of education and overall just, you know, it's just not a priority to for our hearing to be prioritized the same way. And there's a lot of argument that hearing loss has, you know, arguably more health implication than any of these other things that we're talking about.
So let's talk about that. What are the known health implications of just not being able to hear very well? I mean, you just think of it as sort of basically just not being able to hear very well.
Right.
It's not as simple as that. Is that what you're saying?
Not at all. I mean, if we go down to like the family unit, for example, when one of your family members is struggling with hearing loss, it can cause a variety of struggles in your marriage or your relationships with your kids. And you'll notice perhaps isolation, withdrawal from activities, normal things. So hearing loss, as it goes on untreated, can kind of pull that person away from regular life. And it's such a sneaky thing because it happens so gradually that sometimes people don't even realize that it's happening until, whoa, they've got... You know,
so you're talking about really... if you can't really hear things, then you lose your connections.
Yeah.
And maybe you're saying that then you lose your interest in wanting to do things, because does it physically make you very tired if you don't hear very well? Are you straining?
So interestingly, that one of the hearing aid manufacturers, Starkey, a few years ago hired a position, and it was their CMO, their chief medical officer. It was interesting because, yes, these are medical devices, but nobody had in the hearing aid world had really prioritized that. Mm-hmm. But the thought there and the understanding and the reason it became so important is it wasn't a question anymore. It was reality about how isolation and hearing loss was affecting people health wise. So she put together this great, program, this chief medical officer, I can't remember her name, but and when she put this together, she said isolation, it can be tied to 40% of all of the health problems in the senior population. Okay, so 40% of all health problems can be tied back to isolation. And isolation, the number one sense, I mean, as Elizabeth was talking about before, the number one sense associated with isolation is hearing loss. Even if you can't see, you can still conversate with people. You can still connect with people. It is difficult, but you can still stay connected. You can with people. When you're isolated, hearing wise, you disconnect, And then bad things start happening, both, you know, kind of psychologically, right? People get paranoid, they stop going to events, they get grouchy, they'll...
they do experience auditory fatigue.
Yeah.
It's a very common thing.
Yeah, I mean...
You may just not feel you have the stamina to do the things that you enjoy doing so much anymore.
I don't want to go to a party because by the time I leave, I'm so tired.
I mean...
I've been straining to hear somebody the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, they'll see a group of people over there talking, and they're looking around, and they're like, well, who are they talking about? You know, are they talking about me? So there's, I mean, even things from that, they could be talking about and likely are talking about something completely unrelated. But really the health implications are associated with isolation. So, you know, there's a lot of information out there now. And you know, there's articles all over the place, white papers and things, you know, at mayoclinic.org and things like that.
Johns Hopkins
did most of the research over decades associated with this. But basically, when you don't stimulate your brain auditorily properly, you're not getting the right sound signals to your brain, you are causing critical parts of your brain to essentially atrophy. They're not doing their exercises, they atrophy. And it was the way I read it in an article that was a Harvard doc. It was on the Mayo Clinic website, I believe. But I was reading an article, and the way he kind of put it all together was, he was like, basically, the part of your brain that processes sound is directly connected to the memory portion of your brain. So the implication is, statistically, and these vary a little bit, but they say severe hearing loss, for example, depending on where you look, is 4 to 5 times, makes a person 4 to 5 times as likely to develop dementia in their lifetime as someone who has normal hearing or someone who's proactively treating their hearing loss.
Right. I was going to say that. That's for untreated.
Untreated is the key word there. So if you're not getting auditory stimulation, you are asking for trouble cognitively. And you know, it's not meant to be a scary thing or like, mm-hmm. you know, it's just informational, right? I mean, we need to know that people largely don't realize that if they don't do something about their hearing loss or they're not checked, well, who cares? I hear all the time clients in here, and they'll be like, well, it doesn't bother me any, so why would I do anything about it, right? Because subjectively, hearing loss is interesting. Our brains are used to it, so we think it's normal a lot of times, but you can have severe hearing loss and still think it's normal.
So how do you know that your hearing is diminishing and that it's getting to a point that you might need to do something about it?
So I would say, I mean, you know, as a professional, you know, why aren't we proactive like we are with other things, right? I mean, we get checks. I went to the dermatologist when I turned 40 and said, look me over, I want to know if there's anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, whoa, you know, good for you to come in and just have it checked, right? And I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but I'm trying to take my own advice. Like, if we have to be proactive, even if there's not a problem, we should know, we should all have a baseline hearing test is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
We offer free baseline hearing tests for that reason. We want to encourage people to be responsible and get it checked. And then, you know, every so often, we recommend 2 years, but at least every so often.
So what age do you, I mean, because little kids tend to get, you know, if you go through those pediatric screenings, mm-hmm. they get some hearing tests mm-hmm. and so on, and then it just drops off, doesn't
yep.
it, for a long, long time.
Yep.
When should people start to think about building this into their, just their sort of general good health care?
I would say it's just like anything else. I mean, I would encourage even young adults, you know, to have a baseline hearing test. A baseline gives us so much information
mm-hmm.
because, you know, one of the other things that's largely unknown is how many people, there's actually more hearing loss in under 65 than there is over 65. So, there's a lot of hearing loss in younger population, but the misconception is that that's just for old people, right?
And so is hearing loss, is that just not being able to hear, or are there just different parts in your audio hearing range that you can't hear? They may be less discernible.
Oh, absolutely. I have, a couple years ago I did a hearing test, or JT gave me a hearing test because I was certain that I had hearing loss, and I tested in the normal range, which was interesting to me, but what I experienced was a threshold shift, which was impactful for me, but it didn't quite register on the audiometer mm-hmm. as anything to be worried about. So I think that just a good pay attention to your body, and if you feel like, man, I'm just not hearing well, just, you know, pop in. You might have wax in your ears, and sure. We'll say, you know, you go here and have it cleaned out, and then you're good to go. Or maybe you've experienced a little threshold shift, and then we would say something like, make sure you're protecting your hearing so you don't shift any further, but you're doing okay.
Yeah,
you know, based on these results right now, but at least then you're aware and maybe more proactive.
Yeah, I mean, the dentist tells you you need to floss more, or you're missing this part, or yeah. You know, if you don't do something about this, you know, filling or something, it's good, or you know, this what do they call it, where you need a filling. Anyway, yeah, cavity. Thank you. Good thing I'm not in the dental field. But anyway, if you don't do something about it, it's going to turn into something more. It's the same type of information. I mean, it's really, it's not that expensive. It's free initially, but I mean, just to maintain it, and we're starting to see a V-notch, we call it, in the high frequencies, or 3,000, 4,000, or 6,000 hertz. That's a classic indication of noise exposure. Wow. So then we can tell those people, okay, you know, this is starting. Now's the time to stop it. That means be vigilant with your hearing protection and things like that. Heredity is a big factor that people don't realize, because they're like, well, my parents never wore hearing aids. Well, that doesn't mean they didn't need them, perhaps, right? So, you know, lots of times people don't realize that heredity is as big a factor as it is. So it's important to track these things. You know, honestly, it's kind of sad and frustrating, because people tend to wait way too long.
Can you slow down deterioration by actually getting some kind of hearing device, or just protecting your
hearing? Protecting for sure. I mean, you can stop any noise, mm-hmm. noise-induced hearing loss, which is very common, especially in the male population, and especially in our part of the world. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of machines and guns and things like that just aggravate that, and you kind of try to tough it out, quote unquote, but you can't tough it out. I mean, it damages your hearing. Mm-hmm. So certainly you can protect from noise loss entirely if you're careful. You know, heredity or illness or things like that, I mean, those are unplanned things that you really have no control over, that you can't stop. However, this segues into a really interesting part of what we're talking about hearing health. Because what you can do if you proactively treat hearing loss, if you get it early and you stimulate properly, not only do you do exceedingly well with hearing aids at that point, they're a lot easier, you adapt to them well, your brain becomes, you know, kind of a cohesive unit with your hearing aids, and they work well. And people, the satisfaction levels are very high in that group, right? So not only that, but those people are stimulating their brain like they're supposed mm-hmm. to. They're treating their brains properly. And then things like, you know, that cognitive factor that we talked about before, but also something called word recognition. This is a little known implication of long-term untreated hearing loss is loss of word recognition. So essentially what you could kind of show that as is, if you think of, you know, our brains processing the English language, we learn it very early, and all of the parts of speech are tied in with these auditory signals, right? These speech cues. So we know what it sounds like. We know what it sounds like associated with a written word, right? And we know how to speak it. So it's all kind of associated and tied in together. Well, when you have long-term hearing loss, essentially all those all those neural pathways that you had associated with speech are rewritten. And if you haven't been stimulating and you're entirely missing speech cues, it'll rewrite all that, and it excludes certain sounds. So then you reintroduce it, right? You get hearing aids, finally, right? It's like, finally time, I'm going to do it. It's only been 40 years, you know, that I've needed them, so I'm going to finally do it. Well, you'd think it'd be just as simple as put them on, and now I can hear those sounds again. Well, you can, but your brain has no idea what to do with them.
So it doesn't recognize them.
Does not. It sounds like garbled.
Okay.
And so people complain when they have higher word recognition challenges, right? When there's a loss there, they very much struggle even with hearing aids because it sounds like a garble. A use case of this was a good friend of ours who waited way too long for hearing aids. He got them later in life, and basically we watched him struggle so much trying to communicate. He could hear, but he couldn't understand people, even with the best technology.
And so he presumably then blamed his hearing aids.
Yeah, he blamed his hearing aids, but okay. It was so sad. Like, by the end of it, he was communicating with a whiteboard with his family because he just flat couldn't understand what they were saying, even with the best technology. And the irony there was that his hearing loss wasn't even... I mean, it was normally a very reachable hearing loss. Mm-hmm. He normally, if he'd had good word recognition, he would have heard well with hearing aids.
So my dad is like this hopeful and beautiful example of what happens when you are proactive. He lost his hearing spontaneously 50 years ago. He's in his 80s right now. And it was at a time when technology was not the greatest. And professionals were telling him, you have a spontaneous, profound hearing loss in both ears. There's nothing we can do for you. And he refused to believe that. And he put on the most powerful hearing aids he could find.
After begging people to put them on him.
And being refused over and over again. And this was in California. And he finally, that's what he started EBA hearing, because he decided to do it himself because he could, at least he knew he could get technology that way. So he got them, put them on, and fast forward a few decades, and he is ready to get a cochlear implant because the technology has advanced. And
yeah, this was 15 years ago.
Before we were getting married, yeah. He decided he was eligible and he needed it terribly. He went down to Denver to do all this testing, and they were amazed, floored by his speech recognition scores with the level of hearing loss that he had.
They're like, you shouldn't be able to understand speech like this with, you know, 40 years of hearing loss. This is, something's amiss, yeah. You know.
But the reason that he was able to was because he was proactive, and he put hearing aids on right away, and
immediately started
stimulating. He never disengaged. So the risk for folks when you just let things go is that disengagement has many implications.
It's not just that you're missing out in the moment, or that you may be a bit isolated and not feel like you want to do the things that you had to do. It's actually a much more fundamental and significant loss.
That can't be regained.
Right.
Great. And he may have been excluded from eligibility for that cochlear implant if his scores hadn't been that good. So they used all those tests and kind of make a decision.
And certainly when he did get it, it allowed it to work the best for him, mm-hmm. because you still use, you know, your brain, right? Processes no matter what sound, whether it's a cochlear implant or a hearing aid or whatever. You need your brain to be working auditorily. That's the most critical component of our hearing, is processing the sound that gets there. And if you don't use it, you think of it as an atrophy. Mm-hmm. It's not good to do that. It's not healthy. So to kind of circle back and answer your question about if you don't treat it, you know, does it help us to treat it, right? Absolutely. It doesn't stop certain types of hearing loss from happening. But basically what Elizabeth's explaining is, you know, there's a difference between hearing loss and then really fundamental problems like word recognition loss and things like that can't be helped by technology. So being proactive is very good. I mean, I've seen people, another use case, a guy came in, had hearing loss congenital. So, I mean, since he was a baby, but didn't do anything about it till he was 19 years old, because so often when kids aren't checked, parents are just blown away. They're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that my kid has hearing loss and I didn't know it. But they're so adaptive and smart and everything and figure it out. So this guy gets hearing aids when he's 19 years old and has pretty significant loss. And fast forward 30 years and he comes into our office and he just moved here. And he said, let me make your life easy. I know exactly what I want. I don't want any fancy technology. I want you to amplify the right frequencies. I don't want any filters or any of this kind of stuff. I just want you to amplify it. And after we got through the process, I realized why. This guy had worn hearing aids every day of his life for the last 30 years, and they were kind of older, louder hearing aids, you know. His brain just adapted to it and melded, kind of, if you will, with the technology. He didn't need any sort of tools that most people need in hearing aids, like wind noise reduction or you know, trying to help reduce background noise and all these other things that are really critical to most people with hearing aids, because his brain could do all that for him. So he just needed...
The brain is very plastic, isn't
yes.
it? In the sense that it really likes to find new ways to work.
Yeah. And so, I mean, he liked an exceedingly high amount of power through the hearing aids because he was used to it, his brain was used to it, and he could process his way through. And he just blew me away. But the reality was is because he leaned into it and embraced it, and his brain took over. And so that's the hardest part. That's why people dress or draw their hearing aids is because they don't kind of allow themselves through this. It's relatively short acclimation period, but it seems long.
Right.
You know, we call the first 2 months of wearing hearing aids the critical acclimation period. But if you get through that, your brain really starts to understand what's going on and can work in conjunction with the hearing aid instead of kind of fighting against it. But
which is the best case scenario for you down the road.
Yes.
You know?
Well, it's interesting that we do not have a parallel way of, you know, it's nothing to wear glasses. I wear them, you wear them, JT, you know, and it's nothing. I mean, do I like them? No. But, you know, what they do for me is totally worth everything
mm-hmm.
else. And I also have this notion that perhaps I'm slowing down any further deterioration
yeah,
and
right.
so on, and I don't get so tired and etc. We don't have the same attitude towards hearing devices.
No, it's changing with the help, ironically, of like the wearable technologies,
mm-hmm.
like earbuds, wireless mm-hmm. earbuds, and headphones
sure.
and things. So that's helping,
mm-hmm.
Helping erase the kind of silly stigma. I say silly, I'm not trying to minimize
no,
people's feelings, but
yeah.
it really is. I mean, honestly, people see this big, ugly, flashing thing behind their ear. They're like, oh God, everybody's going to see it. I'm going to look old. You know, I wore them for 2 years. I have a bald head,
mm-hmm.
you know, and people, as an experiment, I don't have hearing loss, but I was trying to be better at my job, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So I wore them for 2 years straight. And hardly anybody even knew I was wearing
yes.
hearing aids.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that people don't understand it until they do it themselves, and then they realize, oh, like...
Well, and I would say, too, JT mentioned that he doesn't have hearing loss, and he may be in the normal range, but while he was wearing the hearing aids...
Wait, be careful.
There,
I'm joking.
There was an obvious relief in our communication,
really?
Just as husband and wife.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew when he didn't have them in, which is funny because we hear, you know, spouses say this
mm-hmm.
all the time. Like, I can tell when he's not wearing them or she's not wearing them. You've got to put them in. It really provided a lot of relief in our household, you know, and he may have had a threshold shift again.
Yep.
And
then what that means is just, you know, we were born typically with very acute hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And then life happens, whatever it might be, and it shifts. But there's quite a range of hearing that's considered normal, right?
Okay.
So having a threshold shift is just, you know, what used to be at 0 dBs HL, which is hearing level, is shifted to maybe 10 or 15,
right,
which means okay, you need that much more sound to hear it, just to barely hear it. And yes, a threshold shift is impactful. You just don't hear as well as you used to. And so, yeah, that's...
But I didn't realize the benefit of actually putting the hearing aids on until he was doing that experiment.
So one of the, I mean, people may be listening and thinking, gosh, you know, I really do need to do something about this. The implications of not paying attention to this could be intense and severe. But there's a barrier because there's no health insurance doesn't cover this and so on. Does mm-hmm. taking care of your hearing health have to be expensive?
So some health insurances, thankfully, are coming around to it finally a little bit. So there are several insurances that cover. I'd still say the majority don't, including Medicare at this point. But it's, you know, the way I look at it, and again, it's easy as a hearing professional to say this, right? But so firstly, you know, just monitoring your hearing and being proactive could really help your pocketbook, because mm-hmm. we see a lot of noise-induced high-frequency hearing loss in here. It's probably the most common that we see, actually. And so those people could have done something about it if they'd been informed and educated. And
so as simple as something as
hearing protection.
Some kind of simple...
Yeah. So that would have saved them thousands of dollars in hearing aids over mm-hmm. the years, right?
Yeah.
However, you know, even if proactivity, you know, the person draws the short straw and they just have hereditary hearing loss or something, and they have to do something about it. Hearing aids seem exceedingly expensive, right? Ours range from about $3,000 to $7,000 a pair for good prescriptive hearing aids. Yeah, right. Big breath, right?
Yeah.
However, they average 8 years. And
so if you break that down by monthly.
Yeah, right. I mean, and so then I, you know, kind of the way I like to ask people to think about it is, again, respectfully, I understand it's a big number. But I'm like, what else do we do in our lives that it has tremendous value and brings us joy that we spend that kind of money on? You know, we go on a vacation, maybe, you know, spend five, even more, sometimes $10,000, maybe going on a vacation somewhere. It's important to do that. It's valuable.
Well, on a quick calculation on $7,000, 12 months a year for 8 years, you're at about $73 a month.
Right. And that's the best technology out.
Yeah.
That's the top level stuff.
For incredible improvement.
So we think about that.
We've already talked about the impact on quality of life.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems, as you say, like a big number, but in terms of not doing something, can you afford not to can you afford to do it, I suppose.
I mean,
what you're saying.
Yeah, and it,
absolutely.
Elizabeth started talking about, which is every bit as important as like the kind of medical health implication, is just like just quality of life stuff. I mean,
relationships.
How many times have we seen when a spouse comes in and with the person this that thinks they don't have hearing loss and they think they do. And I mean, this is like real stuff. I mean, they're feuding, they're frustrated, they're sometimes on the cusp of having very serious, perhaps separation type stuff, because it's a bunch of pointing fingers. No, you're doing it. You're just mumbling. You won't talk to me. You won't come around. You won't have enough respect to look at me when you're talking to me, and that kind of thing. But at the same time, they don't realize that their high frequency hearing loss is causing everything to have a muffle. And so that person's actually trying to communicate well, but they can't hear it. And so there's this struggle. And man, I'm telling you, it is impactful. People are angry and frustrated, and they don't necessarily have to be. I mean, we can alleviate so much of this communication challenge, and it doesn't. And again, yes, can be expensive, but it works. I mean, we include 3 years of service. We follow up with people. We average after initial fitting 2 to 3 follow-ups, mm-hmm. just in them giving feedback and saying, well, I was struggling with X, Y, and Z. Let's resolve
maybe
it.
Maybe learning how to actually use those devices. Some of them are quite technical. Yeah. I mean, you know, they've got so many bells and whistles on them. Right. Some fantastic functions, but you've got to learn how to make it work for you.
Right.
Well, and simple things like maintenance, like cleaning your hearing aids, that goes a long way when you're troubleshooting, if you're starting to have, you know, a lessened quality with your hearing aids. Simple things, but you can't get all that in one appointment. So you need a few, and we include that. And we've also included, like, free hearing tests for as long as I can remember, as long as we've been
in business, for those first hearing tests,
more like a well check. So we don't want you to be afraid to come in.
Okay.
There's no risk. It's a comfortable environment. You can sit on the couch while you wait.
Yeah,
you
learn about it.
Yeah.
We try to educate people when they come in for their initial hearing test, because a lot of times people come in, they're just, well, I would say not a lot of times. Occasionally, people come in and they're just curious. Like, this is what we want to promote, proactivity. I pat people on the back. I'm like, good for you. Like, you don't necessarily have any issues that you're aware of, but you just want to know, right? Mm-hmm. And then we talk about how to maintain what they've got. Elizabeth and I have this, I think we talked about it before, but what do we call it? Occupational hearing conservationist. Mm-hmm. It's a certification. But the purpose that we of us doing that and maintaining that certification is because we want the people that have normal hearing to maintain it if they have control over that. Like, whatever we can do to protect it, you should do. And you know, of course, if we need to treat it, we would love to help do that, but we want people to maintain it. So, yes, hearing health is hugely impactful, and, you know, kind of that medical officer at Starkey made such a strong argument about how it can so clearly impact people with isolation, because then bad things start happening to people when they're isolated, and you don't have to live in a world like that. Technology has gotten exceedingly better. I tell people all the time, it's not as good as what God gave us, because we have damage in there, and it's never going to be quite that good. However, it is very good, and it can very much benefit people. And, you know, in terms of value, like I was saying, these vacations or buying an ATV even upgrading an interior in the car.
You do those things to enhance the quality of your life.
Right. You buy a piece of furniture or something.
But this is even really much more fundamental than that.
I mean,
because it impacts every part of your life.
Yes.
$73 a month.
Yeah.
And you know, I was commiserating with a fella yesterday. We both have vision challenges, and neither of us seem to be candidates for LASIK or anything like that, which is expensive. I mean, it's about that same dollar amount, I think. So we have to continually buy glasses and prescriptive sunglasses and stuff like that. And if you get good stuff, if you get good prescriptive sunglasses, for example, I mean, they're $600 easy.
Mm-hmm.
And then they wear out and they break, or they lose, or your prescription changes. What do you have to do when that happens? Well, with hearing aids, interestingly, what you do is you get a new hearing test, and we just reprogram the devices. Hearing loss can change dramatically, but you don't need new hearing aids. So another misconception is that, well, people, I just have to keep buying these things every 3 years or 4 years.
Okay.
We're expecting these new ones that are, again, that much better to outlast even the 8-year number that we've got, because they're better hearing aids. And they just need to be reprogrammed. Even if they have a problem and they're out of 3-year warranty, they can be repaired, and it's not that much. And then there's a warranty on them again. I mean, so you only get new technology when there's enough of an improvement in technology
to warrant a
change. So people, I think they're worried to come in because they're like, it's going to cost me a whole bunch of money to go get my hearing checked. It's going to cost me a bunch of money. They're going to ram hearing aids down my throat, you know.
And if you already have hearing aids, we honor your investment, because we understand that even though I can break it down and say $73 a month over 8 years, that's a significant amount. And so we understand that. And if you've already invested in that, we're going to reprogram those hearing aids
make it work. If they're programmable. I mean, or non-proprietary. I mean, there's certain brands that we can't work with, but most of them we can, and we try. But I mean, it really isn't as big a number and as daunting as people. So that's why we encourage people to come in and check it out. I mean, what we do ultimately is we give people 1 week long demos with hearing aids. So they actually take them and try them in their everyday life and go out and really experience them in their life. And then they come back and say whether or not they feel like this is working. And then when they come back, it doubles as a follow-up, because I tell people we never hit home runs. It's not that simple. There's too much going on, and I can't, you know, we can't hear or feel and understand. Yeah. So it's a process. Exactly. We have to get that feedback from the client. It's really critical. There's a lot of subjectivity to the whole thing. So we tailor each experience to each client, and we rely heavily on their feedback in order to do that. But really, I mean, it's all about education and understanding what you're dealing with, and not feeling like you just have to go buy something and not have any knowledge, you know, and try to figure it out on your own. It just doesn't work well that way. And so we try to provide, we include all these things very purposefully. Okay. Yeah.
Well, Elizabeth, JT, thank you for spending some time explaining to us why hearing health is so important. It's not just not being able to hear the TV as well as you used to, that there are actually all kinds of ramifications and implications, but also there's hope. Mm-hmm. And there are things that you can do to kind of retain and stay youthful and vibrant and participating in and retain quality in your life. Thank you so much for your time and for lifting the lid on this important topic.
You bet. Thanks
for having us.